What is happening? Welcome to the Plus Pitch Podcast, your morning pitching podcast from PitcherList.com. My name is Nick Pollock. Today is June 6th. And yes, we are going to talk about baseball. Jordan Montgomery, oh boy, 2 innings and 6 runs. He is a Toby. He's always been a Toby. And you can drop him in your 12-teamers. Because if a Toby is not doing well, you don't trust him, then yeah, don't do this. You want actual analysis? His curveball is getting fewer whiffs, and his changeup has been utilized differently, and it's actually making it a worse pitch. So, what I mean by that is like throwing it more early in counts, and it's just not getting the same results. And his fastballs have always been middling. The best version of Jordan Montgomery is when he's doing the neckbeard approach and actually in rhythm. He does that for like a month, maybe two. Of the season. He did during the playoffs last year, and there you go. There's your lovely playoff tax. But yeah, Jordan Montgomery is not that guy. At least he isn't now. He could be moving forward. It could be a tiara a bit that is turned around right away, but you don't need to invest in that in your 12th team. You don't feel like you need to hold on to this and keep starting him. I know I went on Joe Rico's fantastic podcast, I'm 90 feet from home, yesterday. I said, like, don't worry about Jordan Montgomery. He is what he is. And that is very true. At the same time, I also want to mention, like, 15-teamers, you probably have to hold on to this. 12-teamers, you don't. Okay, cool. Nick Pivetta against Atlanta got the win. 7 innings, 0 runs, 1 hit, 2 walks, 9 strikeouts. 18 whiffs and 37% CSW for a golden goal. And did this against Atlanta, which is great. I am a little weirded out that he threw fewer than 10 cutters. I do think that is more of a sustainable path to success for Pivetta. That is, having a cutter that he confidently throws for strikes, I think, really shifted the second half for Pivetta last year. That meant that the curveball and the sweeper didn't have to do that work to complement the four-seamer. But those pitches did the thing in this game for Pivetta. So as long as they're doing that thing, the cutter isn't needed, so I can understand that. I hope that when the time comes that the curveball and sweeper are not as good, that the cutter does show up and become that pitch for him. But good stuff for Nick Pivetta. Aaron Nola, ace is going to ace, 7 innings, 0 runs. What is it, 2.73 ERA now? Even years, guys. It's just what it is. No, the curveball feel is much better. Actually, it was a little bit tumultuous early on, and he's just been in such a good groove for, like, I don't know, a month and change now. It's great. Joey Estes. Remember yesterday I was talking about, oh, man, I kind of like this Joey Estes start, and I don't know which one I like more, the Soriano one or the Estes. They both worked. You got a win against the Mariners, 6.1 innings of 0 runs and 5 Ks and 1 hit. Beautiful. I don't really think that he's that good. 4-seamers worked well upstairs. Slider and sweeper did things. But now he doesn't get the Dodgers, actually. I have that written down. Is that in the Athletics are not going to face the Dodgers. They're going to be facing the Padres. I somehow got that one messed up. I don't know if I like Estes against the Padres, but you could do worse. He's just really like a command guy with a decent fastball at times. But yeah, I don't feel like I need to go off to the wire and get that. Kenta Maeda did not throw more than 2 pitches as he was pulled with an abdominal injury. And I imagine that the Tigers are going to go with Keiter Montero once again. He was the guy to show up in for the doubleheader. He's a little bit interesting for the Tigers. Now, if he does return for the next one, that would be against the Nationals next Wednesday. But Keiter Montero might go for that one. I don't know. It does make me think, man, Jackson Jobe just threw a side session. And if he were stretched out, he would likely get the call if Maeda does hit the IL. It does also make me think that by the end of June, Jackson Jobe could easily be up if he starts throwing once again. I think they're going to give him like 3 starts or something with the hamstring, and then bam, he's up in the majors. So consider maybe stashing Jackson Jobe for like July 1st or so. I cannot wait. He is, yeah, you think of Jared Jones and Skeens, like, oh man, I wish I had those guys on my team. Well, you can have Jackson Jobe in the second half. That'd be pretty cool. Luis Severino against the Nationals, 8 innings, 1 run, 7 hits, 0 walks, and 4 strikeouts. Great. 70% usage of fastballs, 4-seamers, and sinkers. I just kind of found enough outs. This was 92 pitches in 8 innings, which is just pure efficiency for Severino. His sweeper really did the rest. It's just, they're not that great. And he just kind of threw enough strikes and it worked out. He does get the Marlins next week. He's not pitching in the London series. Fortunate for him. I guess so. That's fine. I don't really want to do this. That is next Thursday, so this is a full week, keep in mind. Logan Gilbert against the Nationals. Not against the Athletics. 7 innings, 1 run, 5 hits, 0 walks, and 5 Ks. And what do you know? The cutter showed up. Yes! You love to see that. It was the Cannibal McSanchez at the top of the zone, which I think is fine. And, okay, cool. Nice. This is a bit of a Blake Snell blueprint. Love to see that, Logan Gilbert. Now, you get two starts. You have the White Sox, which should obviously be good, right? Like, I can't make you an ace if you're not good there. And then you get the Rangers. So I feel like you got two starts to really showcase that you're back in action and things are good. So please go and do that, okay? Awesome. Jose Urania gets the gold star because he went against the Tigers and got the win. 6.2 innings of one earned run, one hit, one walk, and six Ks. This is something that's wild. It's crazy. It's Urania having the little magic of just being Urania and throwing enough competitive moving pitches like sinkers and changeups just well enough against a bad offense. And there you go. He did it. I'm proud of him. I don't feel like you should be trusting this in the slightest. He probably doesn't get another start because John Gray should start over the weekend on Sunday. But let's be happy for him. The legend of Urania continues. We have Jose Soriano as the actual stream pick of the day. And he gave us a how am I supposed to butter my bread with this. But he also got a win, six innings, one run, seven base runners, and a strikeout. Not as good as Estes, I know. But that's still very fortunate and very good, and you're happy with that with Soriano. Once again, he has not had a single start this year that is two earned runs or three. It's been 0-1-4. That's a cherry bomb. Miles Michaelis against the Astros got the win. Props to him. Six innings, two earned runs, five hits, zero walks, and three Ks. All good. It's kind of interesting. He went 62 pitches in six innings, which is wild. That's like 10 pitches per inning. And he got pulled after six because that's it. They're like, yeah, well, let's just go to the bullpen now. Wild, right? That's modern baseball. No. Third time through the lineup? Absolutely not. Let's go to the bullpen. I don't care if it's the 62 pitches. We don't care. Jose Berríos against the Orioles. Six innings, two earned runs, six hits, three walks, and two strikeouts. It's a near very poor quality start, but he had one fewer earned runs, and also we're really happy with that against the Orioles. Fortunately, he didn't get the win there, but it will be Milwaukee and Cleveland next. It's actually more contentious than you think because Milwaukee's been acting like a really good offense. Same with Cleveland, but we're just going to let this keep going for Jose Berríos. Carlos Rodon got a share of the gallows pole against the Twins, got the win, six innings, two earned runs, three hits, zero walks, and nine strikeouts. Oh my gosh. And here's the thing, you would think, oh yeah, fastball and slider were the main things. Well, the fastball wasn't 96, but those two pitches actually weren't really the difference maker. It was the changeup and curveball combining for 10 whiffs. Oh man, that's pretty cool. I'm a little surprised. I'm happy that Cutter kind of got shelved. It was this weird, thing that kind of messed up both the slider and the fastball. And I hope he can hold on to this. Come on, Carlos Rodon. This has been an amazing run. And I believe you have eight wins now, which is pretty dang impressive. Aaron Ashby against the Phillies. Five innings, two earned runs, two hits, five walks, and three strikeouts. Hey, he's back. That's nice. Five walks is not. He had more sinker precision, but the slider and change are not as reliable as they used to be. So hopefully over time, we do see a version of Aaron Ashby that's reminiscent of 2021. As of right now, I'm not very much in on this. We, of course, have other guys to talk about from yesterday's games. We're going to go over all of that and tomorrow's starters after this break. Albert Suarez against the Jays. Five innings, two earned runs, five hits, one walk, and four strikeouts. I'm glad to see that the cutter stepped up and was good on the edge of the plate when he needed to for whiffs, and then also was inside the zone for strikes. The four-seam was worse, though, and it feels like this is too much of a gamble against Atlanta for Albert Suarez. I can also imagine a situation that Kapovich is so good that the Orioles say, like, yeah, that was nice, Albert Suarez, but we're just going to go with Cade instead. I'll talk about Cade in a moment after we go over all the pitchers. From yesterday's game, Zach Eflin returned only four innings, 55 pitches. It's kind of what you should have expected because he didn't have a rehab start in between his beginning and end of IL stint. 70 to 80 pitches is what to expect next time. He wasn't very sharp. It was the Marlins, so that's how he got through this one. 200 runs in four innings, I should say. I'm not really too in on Eflin, but he should be fine. He should be like a Holly at best throughout the year, and he's going to get the Cubs. I'm like, sure, fine. Just go with that. Jordan Hicks against the Arizona Diamondbacks needed 92 pitches to go just 3.2 innings and 200 runs, 10 base runners, though. And his sinker and splitter were hit when they had YM lock, so that is essentially waist-high pitches. And then he had a 52% strike rate on the sinker. That's it. There you go. That's your ball game with Jordan Hicks. You're not supposed to be that pitch, that sinker. You're supposed to be the foundation. So we just keep going with the Astros because Hicks should get more strikes with the sinker. Dylan Cease against the Angels got a poor quality start, 6 innings, 300 runs, but only 5 base runners in 6 Ks, and just 4 out of 53 four-seamer whiffs is kind of like, yeah, like the four-seamer just isn't that good, but he got 10 slider whiffs, so fine. He threw 11 sweepers for a 44% strike rate. Yeah, that's not it. Actually, I think it was worse than that. I did bad math. I think I did 4 over 11 being 44. It's not, Nick. It's worse than that. That's 4 over 9. So yeah, not good. That's a sub 40% strike rate. Yeah, and I still feel that like the cutter is the pitch that he would need, because the sweeper isn't a strike rate pitch. The cutter would have been, and I think it would have been a better compliment, but that's just me. Cease is pretty much what we think he is. As a premium cherry bomb, you have Paul Skenes against the Dodgers. This was such a fun game, and honestly, there are certain times when I talk about pitchers where it's just, okay, cool, it's like nice to watch the pitcher, and the pitcher does what he does. It's really fun when it's a real good moment against a fantastic offense. I'm an elite pitcher against a really good offense. It's just fun. And honestly, seeing Skenes and Jones both go against Betts, Ohtani, Freeman multiple times is just awesome. And seeing Ohtani go against Skenes, lose the battle, and then win the battle after was so fun. It was so fun. But then there was also this really stupid breaking ball he threw to Andy Páez. 0-1 pitch. And yes, he threw the splinker first, and it looked like he was trying to time for 100. Sure. But then he threw an 83-mile-per-hour slider that was kind of middle down away. Like, it wasn't on the edge. It was just very hittable all the way through. And Páez just took it out. And considering how bad he looked on the splinker, I would think throw the splinker again. Don't try and slow it down more, because then he'll make a bigger adjustment. Also, either you do the splinker or the four-seamer at that point. I don't think you go all the way down to 83. And it was also just too much of the zone. It's like, you think about that pitch, Skenes. I think the other stuff, like Ohtani hitting the home run, whatever, that kind of stuff, fine. But that's the one that's like, oh man, that was a stupid breaking ball. Like, oh, you shouldn't have done that. And I think you're going to see Skenes adjust a little bit moving forward from there. Eric Fetty against the Cubs, 5 innings, 300 runs, 6 hits, 0 walks, 7 Ks. So he's got 7 Ks and 17 whiffs out of this. Really good command with 11 whiffs on the cutter over 41 thrown, which is unreal. It's like a 25% swing strike right there. I looked past the one extra earned run for, like, it's 5 innings of 300 runs, and if it was 5-2, you'd be super thrilled with this, right? So fine. Like, one earned run is not going to really judge my perspective of starts that much. You have Ronel Blanco against the Cardinals, 5.2 innings of 400 runs, 5 hits, 2 walks, 2 Ks. And what's actually really interesting is I talked about with Eno on the Craft, which is, I think, just came out today. You should definitely listen to this episode. I think it's one of the more interesting ones about pitch modeling and things we're doing with statistics, more so than usual, and if you can believe that. And I talked about this thing I'm doing with Kyle Bland, which is waste pitches and mistake pitches, and combining them, pretty much being like, waste pitches are pitches defined by PLV that are 95% ball or higher. And that is like the probability that PLV assesses with a pitch. Like, we have an assessment of every single pitch. That's what PLV does. And so a waste pitch is one that we think is, yeah, that's going to be a ball. While a mistake is really bad, it's double the hit chance inside the zone, right? So those are the two bad things to do with a certain pitch. And Ronel Blanco has one of the higher waste pitches in the majors, because his four-seamer is that. His four-seamer is just so often wasted up. And what's interesting is that in this one, he didn't do that. And I actually kind of like when Ronel Blanco wastes four-seamers, because it's always this thing that's kind of like around. It's not completely, you know, it's not like 50% waste. It's like 15 or so, where the league average is around like 10. That was my guess, and I got it right. but it was like 15 or so, and Ronel Blanco threw them more so in the zone here without the changeup being really good. And that's the issue. Like, you can get away with waste pitches on any one of them that you have. Like, think about Blake Snell throwing a ton of waste pitches with his slider last year. However, the good ones were really good. It also made the curveball a little bit tougher, because you didn't know if that was a slider or not. Also, the fastball better, because you didn't know if that was a slider or not, right? So, having those wastes are still somewhat valuable. And Ronel Blanco turning those waste pitches into actually hittable ones in the zone is worse, right? Especially when the changeup isn't good. So the changeup not being good, I think, is also the really big problem. And that should change, because Blanco's had an amazing changeup the entire season. So I wouldn't really do much about this one. I think we're still really cool with Ronel Blanco moving forward. Dakota Hudson against the Reds, 4.1 innings of 4 runs, 5 hits, 4 walks, and 4 Ks. Yep, that is Dakota Hudson. Graham Ashcraft at Colorado didn't do well because you shouldn't be starting and rostering Graham Ashcraft. Jameson Tyon unfortunately went 5 innings of 5 earned runs, 10 hits, 1 walk, 6 Ks against the White Sox. We should probably move away from Tyon for the moment. Just wait until the fastballs are working better. And just pretty much like the locations of everything are working, because those are the White Sox, and you can't do this, and you can't really do anything with him. Now, Braxton Garrett against the Rays. I know some of you went for Garrett as opposed to some of the riskier options, and unfortunately, this one didn't work out. 2.2 innings of 5 earned runs, and really the biggest thing for me is that Garrett's really just mostly sinker slider. And until you see the cutter up and in to right-handed batters, until you see the changeup really doing well, I don't want to jump into Braxton Garrett. Actually, last year, if you followed my roundups, you would have seen that it was a moment for about 6 weeks where Garrett really found all of his pitches and they were working in tandem. And we're not seeing that yet from Garrett, so I'm out until then. Patrick Corbin against the Mets. Okay. James Paxton, 1.2 innings, 6 earned runs, and it's time. It is time, guys, against the Pirates. It's time. Chris Paddock against the Yankees, 4 innings of 7 earned runs, 6 hits. I mean, it was against the Yankees, 7 Ks. It's actually kind of interesting to hear the conversation I had with Eno about Paddock yesterday. I'm not a big fan. He has good extension. I just think his fastball's not that good. I don't think it locates it super well. I don't think that his bulk and change is that great either. He does get Rocky Road in Oakland up next. It is possible that those are okay. I just don't really feel that there is enough electricity with Chris Paddock these days. I don't think it's a good enough fastball shape for this to work out. And last but not least, there's Spencer Schwellenbach. And this is interesting. It was against Fenway, but I forgot to link it inside the post. But Rafael Devers hit a home run that was so stupid. It was a low fast slider out of the zone that he oppo tacoed over the Green Monster somehow. 4.2 innings of 6 earned runs, 7 hits, 4 walks, and 2 Ks. I watched a lot of this. 15 whiffs is legit. For 34% CSW is legit. And yeah, he threw some bad pitches that they did hit and all that kind of stuff. He has a full arsenal, Schwellenbach, and he's pitching for Atlanta. And I'm kind of intrigued here about Schwellenbach. I think that there actually is something legitimate inside of this. Kerr did show up after. I don't think that Kerr's going to replace Schwellenbach. I really do think that Schwellenbach has enough in the tank here to be a legitimate starter in your 12-teamers, something like a Holly moving forward, that he should be going over, you know, a strikeout per inning or more and with good ratios and wins. Like, that's kind of what I see. That said, we might not get that because he gets the Orioles next, and I don't want that. He gets the Rays after. That's pretty much the start that I'm circling if he's still in the rotation. Atlanta might move him out before then. So we'll see. That would be Sunday the 16th. If you have Schwellenbach now in a 12-teamer, I don't think you need to hold on to him. I don't think you need to stash him because no one's going to pick him up for that Orioles start. And then if you want, you can in the middle of next week around June 12th or June 13th if Schwellenbach is still around. You stash him then for that Sunday start. That's probably what I would do with Schwellenbach. Looking forward to today and tomorrow's starters. Yes, Cade Povich is going, not Kyle Bradish. I have Cade Povich at the bottom of my questionable start tier. Cade Povich, to me, isn't that exciting. I don't really think of him as a major whiff guy. It's okay. It's a step above your typical call-up, and it's also for the Orioles, which is good. It is a MLB debut. I don't know how Baltimore is going to utilize Povich moving forward. It's, as they've advertised, is just a rest game for the Orioles. They have a lot of starts coming up. They might even make this a full six-man because they have a seven-day week next week. And they had this Thursday, of course, they're pitching as well, or playing as well. So you might see the six man for a second with the Orioles just to give some extra rest for their starters. That said, if you want to spec out this, by all Johns, you can do that. Thing is, if you were to start again, then it would be against Atlanta. So, and then it would be the Phillies, something like that. So I'm not too enthused by this, and I don't really feel like you need to go and get Cade Povich right now, but obviously we'll talk more about him for the roundup tomorrow. And looking at tomorrow's games, we have Chris Sale, Freddie Peralta, Joe Ryan, Garrett Crochet, Kyle Bradish. Yes, Kyle Bradish is going tomorrow. I'm not worried about injury with that. I think they just are giving extra rest. You have Yamamoto, Logan Webb, Framber Valdez, Justin Steele. All that auto start tier probable start is Michael King against the Diamondbacks, Bryce Miller against the Royals, Reese Olson against the Brewers, Lodolo against the Cubs, Bassett against the Athletics, Mitch Keller's on a Vargas rule against the Twins, Ryan Weathers, whose changeup has been amazing, had 11 strikeouts against the Rangers, gets the Guardians. Cooper Criswell and Mike Lorenzen are two streaming options. I'm going with Criswell against the White Sox just because the White Sox have lost 13 in a row. And he goes five innings and he throws consistently well with good ratios, while Lorenzen is more of a quality start play against the Giants. Questionable start tier is Jake Irvin, Brandon Font, Logan Allen, and Luis Medina. Irvin's on a Vargas rule. Brandon Font against the Padres. I know that he's made some adjustments with the sinker. Four-seamer might be a little bit better now, but I still feel like he's missing that one last piece of the puzzle, which makes it more of a cherry bomb scenario for Brandon Font against the Padres. But maybe without Machado, that's worthwhile. It's up to you there. If you're in a quality star league, you might want to go for that one, or if you're chasing a win, maybe. Logan Allen against the Marlins. I don't really love what Logan Allen's doing. His four-seamer is just far too hittable this season. But maybe that does work. He doesn't really have a whiff pitch against the righties. And then Luis Medina is pitching again, not Hogan Harris. Hogan Harris is going to be going on Saturday. And Luis Medina against the Jays. If you watch my video on him against Atlanta, I know that came through, but he's very wild with his command. It really comes down to his slider and his curveball getting enough strikes. I don't know if he's really going to do that. It could work out. Could be like five plus innings of like five strikeouts and change and whatever. But it's very cherry bomb-esque. And then do not start tier is Cody Petit, unfortunately, against the Dodgers. I do actually kind of like Petit, and his one after this against the Royals, which is also unfortunate. But yeah, Petit is kind of a Toby. He's replacing, of course, Clark Schmidt in the meantime before Gerrit Cole arrives. You have Griffin Canning against the Astros, just not enough there. Austin Gomber had a really good stretch, got some elbow pain, was rested for like a week, and then pitched against the Dodgers and was destroyed. And I just think that's too much of an interruption. Even though he gets the Cardinals. Aaron Civale just hasn't looked good for a while. He gets Baltimore. Lance Lynn, absolutely not. I don't care. It's Rocky Road. I just don't want to do that. And then Daniel Lynch gets the Mariners, and Daniel Lynch doesn't do anything special. That is it for today. Thank you all so much for supporting what we do. My name is Nick Pollock, and may your BABIPs be low and your strikeouts high.